be looking at this next panel session at the experience outside of sport venues, into the city and the live experience. Great, thanks. So yeah, as I was saying, we're just going to move on from sport and the experience outside of sports venues into the city, the live experience and culture and arts. And then there's going to be another panel that follows a coffee break where we're then actually going to be talking about business events. So just to introduce myself, first of all, and the company I work for, I'm Chris Pollard, as Callum mentioned, Director of Event Planning at CSM Strategic. For those that don't know, CSM Strategic is a sports management consultancy company and part of the CSM Sports and Entertainment Group. CSM Strategic work in three main areas of consulting. The first is helping cities bid for major events. The second area is helping organising committees, indeed in some cases cities and countries, plan and deliver major events. And then the third area that CSM Strategic works in is other strategic projects, including organisational and governance reviews, sports strategies, both at the elite sport and grassroots sports level, and event strategies and venue strategies. But enough about CSM Strategic. The topic today, as you'll see above me, is live entertainment in the city. So it's a very broad topic, and some of the key themes no doubt we will be covering include how cities use culture, arts, and other live entertainment to engage their audiences, how culture and ceremonies fit within other mega events, and indeed I'm sure we'll touch on live sites, what Sir Craig really mentioned earlier about the successful engagement at the recent Rugby World Cup in England showed that 1 million people attended the fan zones or live sites, and indeed if we go back a few years to London 2012, 5 million people attended live events there. So we're going to be very much picking up on the activation and animation of the city, and I'm sure a key buzzword that will no doubt be used is the engagement of the local populations within these events. So we've got a great panel today. I'm going to introduce each of them. And then I'll ask them to come up and we'll move into the questions. First of all, we've got John Ora, who has been the European Broadcasting Union's Executive Supervisor of the Eurovision Song Contest. Prior to that, he has more than 15 years' experience in major productions, co-productions and acquisitions at Norwegian public broadcaster NRK and TV2 Norway. We've then got David Behe, Head of Global Events for Agreco. I'm sure many of you will know that Agreco provides temporary power and temperature control solutions to a wide range of event customers around the world. And then finally, we've got Ronnie Hansen, Head of Development at the City of Odense in Denmark. And within his role, he is responsible for developing the strategy for attracting and developing large-scale events and experiences. So if the panel want to come up and join me, we'll move into the questions. Right, so if I could possibly just start with you, John Noir. The audience here is clearly made up of many people who know a huge amount about sports, but some may not know so much about the Eurovision. So could you tell the audience a little bit more about the Eurovision Song Contest, and in particular, what are some of the emerging and future trends with that event?
Yeah, I can start going back 60 years. We started the first Eurovision Song Contest in Lugano in Switzerland in 1956, and it has been an annual music at least some of the members of the EBU, the European Broadcasting Unions, have 73 members in 56 countries around Europe and also beyond what we define as the geographical Europe. Eurovision Song Contest is now three TV shows staged over 1 week. reaching out to almost 200 million viewers around Europe and beyond. As I said, been going on for 60 years. When it comes to the future of Eurovision Song Contest, we firmly believe in the gravity of an event like Eurovision Song Contest. And we see that more and more of our members are looking for big events that can fit well on their schedule. Everything that can unite the viewers, and like big sports events, Eurovision Song Contest really unites viewers around Europe on a yearly basis.
Great, thank you. And if I could move on then to David. Obviously, Greco are involved in many different sport events. Some of the largest multi-sport mega events require temporary power. Can you tell us a little bit more about the solutions you provide, in particular within the context of the arts and culture and other live events, how you provide solutions in that context?
So for the ones who are not familiar with Greco, we are a temporary provider of power solutions and temperature control all over the world. We are based here in Glasgow with our design and manufacturing and assembly fabric down the road in Dumbarton. We operate indeed, we are well known in the sports world, but events in Greco are much more than that. With Jörn Ola, we have worked together for Eurovision. Basically, the difference, I don't believe that there is difference between sport and big cultural or music festivals. The needs are the same. It's critical. It's mission critical. And it all happens in a short period in a place which is normally not having that. So, in Greco, we try to work as close as possible with the organizers. We try to help them by talking about mostly the temporary solutions, because we believe very strongly, and not only in power and temperature control. I mean, it can go from water to temporary structures to temporary stadiums to temporary halls. Everything is possible these days temporary. So you don't need to build this white elephant to hold a very nice event. On the other side, you have also the very nice city festivals, which request much less, which are cultural, and where also there, by innovation and by creativity, you can do fantastic things in your city.
Yeah, and of course, that was a lot of those same aspects were picked up this morning in when we talked about Agenda 2020, and I'm actually going to come back to you on Agenda 2020 in a moment as well, actually, because one of the recommendations for that was particularly interesting to the solutions you provide. But first, if I may move on to Ronnie, from the perspective of your city, Odense in Denmark, can you tell us a bit about the types of events that you are currently hosting, you've got in your pipeline, and then also about some of the events that you are going to look to host or be well in the future?
Yeah, sure. So the city of Odense, as we say, it's kind of the same melody as Beyonce, really. So Odense, that's a good way to remember it. We have this classical story about an industrial city that suddenly didn't have any industry anymore and had to look into new directions to rebrand ourselves. It's a story much like a lot of others, but we put on a very aggressive strategy. We started up 18 months ago, and during the last year, we've attracted just below 200,000 new guests to the city through a pretty aggressive strategy that I'd be happy to develop a bit on. Well, we're looking a lot, since our big issue is with attracting young people, just graduated or establishing their first family. We're looking very much into events that have a pull amongst the young people, of course. So we look a lot into music. We've done a big cooperation with the NBA Scandinavia for the first time, doing a multi-year cooperation on street events using the city. Big music festivals is really big, and then some of the sports and cultures that are just have a big pull on everyone below 40, really.
Yeah, and it's great to see. Just reflecting on one of the questions we had this morning, where there was a question about age and some of the people in the audience. So could I just stick with you and just ask from your perspective? You told me earlier you were 30. I'm allowed to tell the audience of your youth as it were. How does that impact your strategy and how your team works to draw events to your city?
Yeah, well, it's something about what you're native in, I guess. For example, there's been a lot of talk about today about digital strategies and how to use social media and so on. And I guess for anyone at least below 30 or so, talking about a social media strategy would be talking about like a radio strategy or TV strategy. It's just marketing when it comes down to it, right? And social media strategy is, of course, completely integrated part of anything you do. Also, this trending topic about engagement, well, I think engagement is kind of the way that young people actually go to events. It's all about engagement. If there's not any engagement, then it would be dead. So the talk about engagement is kind of a, yeah, I don't think the young people on your team will speak so much about engagement. It's more like it's built in.
Sure. And I mentioned earlier about Agenda 2020. I think any event within sport or the event sector at the moment always tends to come back to that. I was interested, David, that one of the recommendations from Agenda 2020 was that the IOC, and I'm going to quote here, consider the provision of turnkey solutions for organising committees in areas requiring highly specific expertise. Now, I think your area of providing temporary power more than any is an area requiring specific expertise. Would you agree that the event organisers and rights holders should potentially be looking at longer-term partnerships for companies like yourself to ensure that specific areas which require deep expertise and capability are developed and properly planned and delivered at events, whether sport or otherwise?
Well, it is a very hot topic at the moment. It's mathematical. If a concept is fixed and it's just changing from city to city, basically it's one by one, you could copy it in to multiple cities, multiple years, and I mean that would affect the commercial pricing in a good way, and that would affect the efficiency, the sustainability. We believe very strong in it in Agreco. Of course, we are a provider of temporary solutions, but being that, we are not leaving anything behind. So basically, I think with the discussions this morning, I don't make a difference between sports and cultural or music or it is what a city wants. If a city believes that it needs to attract a lot of young people to give the city back some life, well, it will be different than a city who wants to host a multi-venue sports event. For that, you will need other other facilities. But in the middle, you can find, in this world today, by technology, by innovation, you can find a bunch of companies which can do a lot at a decent price to be able to host such events. And I think that is making anything possible, anything.
Sure, good answer indeed. If I could now just move on to Jean-Ola, and one of the things that I think's interesting in particular with the Eurovision Song Contest is, unlike many other major events and sport events where they're actually bid for, of course, the Eurovision Song Contest is hosted by the winner of the previous year's event. So I'd be interested to find out from your experience what difference that makes to cities, or indeed the broadcasters specifically, who in effect win the rights to hosting that event, and how that impacts their sort of longer term strategy for that country or the city.
Yeah, host it, and that. Yeah, if you win it, you host it, and that's a very strong commitment. That is. Amongst the members of the EBU, it's a huge challenge to take on Eurovision Song Contest because you have less than a year to prepare for, to welcome more than 1,000 delegates, 1,500 journalists, a 3 state-of-the-art live TV show, more than 7 hours of great content coming out of there, but also all the surrounding services that usually is not with a public broadcaster, like security, transportation, the whole logistics setup, press center, and so on. So it's a huge challenge, and that's why it's important that when a host broadcaster win, it can team up with the city. And we have been very lucky of last year being in traveling. We have been very happy to stay in places where there are sufficient knowledge and also sufficient funding for. I think I lost it a little bit, but that's fine. Yeah.
So I'm going to see if I have any more luck. I don't quite know what game the microphones are playing you on, John Oyer. But if I may just stick with you just for a moment, and a question I had again about the Eurovision as an interesting analogy and perhaps how it's different from the world of sport that we all know. How do you take that Eurovision experience out of the venue and then into the city during the contest and how do you engage the citizens across the city?
We focus a lot on the visibility of Europe to a new city, and the reason for that is that this is a cultural event that is not only happening on the stage and out on the TV screens, but it's also happening in the city. We are creating every year in the city a Europe Village, which is a prominent square in the city. Where the sponsors have their a possibility to reach out to the audience. We have a stage where all the performers can come and play during the 2 weeks that they actually are in the city rehearsing and performing. We have huge public viewings, like on the town hall square in Vienna last year. There were more than 30,000 people showing up for public viewing. This year in Stockholm, we will have a football stadium that we will with watching the shows, and this is of course a very important part. Then we all over the city. Usually we have branded trams, taxis, buses, and so on. So it is to create a sense of circus coming to town, and that's important. And we also get the feedback from the cities that has hosted Eurovision Song Contest that they benefit a lot from that visibility, both locally, of course, the pride, what happens on site, but also internationally in media exposure and all over the world, actually.
Sure, and so one of the interesting things about Eurovision, as we've touched on, is you really just have 1 year. You just have 1 year to organise the event. If I can just move on to David and ask some of the specific challenges that you face in terms of not just Eurovision and the partnership you described earlier, working with Eurovision, but for other major events. What are the specific challenges that you face working with either cities or rights holders in providing your services for events?
The biggest challenge now, if we stay in Europe, is sustainability efficiency. So basically, everybody's looking at being very green, and it is important. It is important for the future, and being a power provider, we have been changing our complete mentality. In whereas before you were putting big power stations, whereas now we are looking with multiple smaller devices to power the same and with the same security for the end user. Temperature control wise, we work much more in detail to the, if you take a hall, we will never again cool down the whole hall. We will look at who has a need of cooling and we will really adapt everything. So basically the word is maybe adapting much more to the actual need. If you go then to the countries which where the sustainability is not so much, we will still take that with us and try to be as consistent and learn. And with that committee or with that organizer, event organizers, we will always look at being efficient. Efficient is the word of the future in the power and temperature control business. Yeah.
And I think indeed in other aspects of organizing events, certainly efficiency is a key part of ensuring that events can continue to be delivered at the lowest cost and with the maximum outcomes created. And actually outcomes is something that I want to move on to and ask Ronnie about. So in terms of the strategy for your city, how do you measure success of the events that you host, and do you evaluate those outcomes that you hope to achieve through hosting your events?
Yeah, thanks. We evaluate really heavily. Of course, we want to see derived economic activity in the city, and everything from just a simple hotel room sales to also actually being able to be a platform for new business propositions amongst companies from outside, and of course local companies. We measure on these leads, of course. But we have a specific challenge with attracting young people to a booming robot industry. So one of the things we look very heavily towards is how many from that segment actually arrive to our city to see these events. So we have some very, very specific key points that we look into, specific KPIs that we look into, and I think that's actually one of the really, really good outcomes we've had of the strategy process, is to look very, very, very specifically into what we want to do. And we don't just use these really, really big numbers. We want to do net economy less than gross economy, and we want to account for all the alternative costs and so on. So we're trying to do more transparent figures and transparent numbers, and then look at the very specifics of what we want. Yeah.
Great. Well, look, I thought it would be good to open this up to the audience. So at this point, I'd like to invite any questions for the panel. Okay. Well, whilst is this one? Yeah, up at the back.
If I may, just a general one on the Eurovision Song Contest. In terms of planning for the future, how are you dealing with, you know, the perception about the bloc voting and the fact that United Kingdom has come consistently at the bottom of the pile for years? Because I mean, isn't there a danger of losing some of those key hosts? Some of those key countries that take part and help fund it?
I had a meeting with the BBC just the other day in London, and there is no danger for BBC to leave the contest, that's for sure. We in 2009, we reintroduced juries to Eurovision Song Contest to balance out the diaspora voting and the sort of predictable voting that had been following Eurovision Song Contest for quite a lot of years. When you just had the public voting, it was a lot of 12 points going from Germany to Turkey every year because of the diaspora. We have balanced that out quite well. It is a fact that in regions where you have similar culture, like the Nordic regions, the Balkan region, and even in the German-speaking region of Europe, you have some kind of neighboring voting, and that's natural. You vote for what you like. And UK and Ireland is the same. They have a long tradition voting for each other. So it's not something that we are struggling a lot with. I think the perception is worse than actually the fact of it. So, but seeing it today, 41 participating broadcasters this year. There is a huge interest among our members and among the audience in Europe. The viewing figures are growing every year. So we see a steady development in the right direction. And by addressing this question, it gives me an opportunity to say that the voting is fair. It's very heavily controlled, both digitally and manually. And we always have a fair result.
I think one of the outcomes from that is that we can be assured of having Terry Wogan for a few more years yet. Then,
hi, Jeff Burke from ES Global. It's an interesting panel for us because we grew up in the music business and have transferred our skill sets into the sports business. We built large temporary infrastructure and work closely with David. It's really more of a comment than the question, but just to expand the idea of this temporary solution being used more consistently. If the IOC, and they probably won't, take up the challenge of supplying those temporary infrastructures, it comes down to the cities actually communicating with one another and working together. And this is something that even with all of the knowledge sharing that we constantly hear about, it never happens. And there has to be some sort of formal procedure that allows or the cities are instructed to use and reuse temporary infrastructure from winter to summer to winter. It all of the kit is transferable, so a basketball arena in the summertime can be a curling arena in the wintertime. So there's the solutions are out there, but the communication and the will of the different cities to get involved in sharing that knowledge and sharing in the cost ultimately of these things is just not there. And I think it does merit more debate.
Yeah, I mean that is a very good point, good comment. I'll see if David in a second wants to respond to that. But clearly some of the underlying commercial financial imperatives, I think, make that to date something that hasn't been achieved so easily. But completely agree with ultimately the benefit that could be gained from having cities talking to one another, collaborating, and in effect doing some of the cost sharing that you talk about. But I don't know, David, do you have a perspective that you want to
no,
share on
no.
that?
Jeff said it very well. The only comment that I would make, and it's funny that, music and cultural found out much easier that they can rent a temporary. I mean, it's the sporting world and who is waiting.
Yeah, and certainly one of the just picking up on that one of the trends that has emerged over the past decade, say, would be for a much stronger use of temporary infrastructure. So let's hope, certainly looking forwards, that Agenda 2020 and the change, not just in the Olympic movement, but more broadly within the event sector, will allow greater use of temporary infrastructure for more sustainable outcomes at the end of it. Any more questions from the audience? Okay, well, it looks like we're close to wrapping up. If I may, I'm just going to ask one final question to each of the panelists. The overall topic or theme throughout has been innovation. We did talk a little bit about some future trends in industry, but if I could ask each of the panelists specifically to talk about how within your sector you are innovating, and could share some of those thoughts with the audience. And maybe I'll start with you, John, on that.
Well, we are every year looking at how to bring Eurovision Song Contest to the next step. As I said, it's 7 hours of great content that is coming out during that week. But we also have to work thoroughly throughout the year to engage the audiences. And we are working specifically on a new digital strategy now. We are tendering new people into or new companies into work with us to see if we can lift this also to another level where we can engage the audience more than just around the weeks of or the week of the events. And Eurovision Song Contest is first of all a TV event that is taking place in a new host city every year, and it travels around Europe. But in order to engage and to move forward and to connect throughout the year, we need a new strategy, and we're actually working on that at the moment.
Well, Again, at Agrico, we try to step in as soon as possible in the process of an event, and from there on, we try to design with the organizers to the end user. And by doing that very efficient, we try to minimize the costs of energy for the end client.
I think what we see is that a lot more right holders will emerge from nothing. For example, like eSport, I actually had a bit of a laugh by myself up there about hearing that skateboarding was going to be part of the Olympic sphere, since when I skated back in the early 90s, it was already huge and a billion-dollar industry. If I would really wanted to be something innovative in the Olympic sphere, I would be looking at some eSports maybe or something like that to take 20-year leap ahead. And that's some of the stuff I think we'll see. We're trying to do more partnerships with rights holders such as eGames, rather than evolving, participate in some bidding game and get new events in every year. We try to keep events, do partnerships, and then do 10 years partnership for building an event together. And that's what we actually see from the new rights holder, from more the commercial side. They bring their own money. They don't need you as a sponsor. They need you as a partner. They want to talk about this engagement. They want to talk about city dressing together and making it a like fan zones is not something engagement. That's an integral part of the actual event. So it's more like this partnerships between cities and right holders and not just sponsorships and then bringing it in. Yeah,
and I think that's a very, very pertinent point actually about esports. It was interesting to read just the other week that I think the first esports team has transferred for £1 million, if I remember rightly, or $1 million, but a huge amount of money for a team within the esports world. So that's certainly going to be inevitably a huge growth sector. So I think that's a really, really strong point to end on. But I'm going to give one final opportunity for questions, because we have got 1 or 2 minutes. If anyone had any final questions, raise your hand now. Oh. Okay.
Thanks very much. You've talked a lot about rights holders, sports rights holders, and how cities can attract sports to their events. What do cities need to do to attract live entertainment to their events? How, for instance, do you make sure that Madonna comes to your city when she's on tour? Ronnie, do you know anything about this?
We've done a lot to look at our infrastructure. We didn't want to, while doing setting up the strategy, we didn't want to build a lot of new arenas or anything like that. We wanted to make sure that our actual city was ready to host festivals and so on. And it's not that, well, of course, it's complicated. It's very high competition, but if you have good power supplies and you have had good water supplies and you have good logistics, just actually making a platform for these rights holders to earn some money, that's basically it. That's been our lesson, at least make it easy for them. Well, I used to own a venue, so before I started this job, so it's been a bit easier, but there are like 5, so just so start from an end.
Yeah, I just want to add that of course the infrastructure is very important, and I have an example from Denmark where one of the best venues is out far outside of the main cities, and it's in Herning. It's a good 90 minutes drive from Copenhagen, but that's where the Madonnas come when they go to Denmark, because the venue is fantastic. It's a great place to go, and people travel there. So I think having that infrastructure in place is the only way to attract big international concerts and cultural events.
Well, I think that wraps up the this session. So we're a couple of minutes ahead of schedule. We're now got a coffee break. I think the next session starts in 40 minutes. So if everyone could be back here at 3:45, we're going to be looking at business events. And if I could just finish up by thanking very much the panel for a really, really interesting session. Thank you.